This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
That her life would never again be so ordinary. She's gonna see the world and see what there was to see. She didn't have any interest in settling down with her degree. So all consequences, coincidences, that commences, don't worry about me.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. That's right, friends. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from the cozy confines of Trinidad World Recording Studios, my recording studio, my creative enclave here in Fort Worth, Texas. Oh, welcome. Well, since, as it's well known, since last Wednesday, you have been chewing on the last few podcasts. Nick Verzosa was here. Pete Coatney was here. Discussions of music all over the map, all kinds of topics. Well, we are always thrilled to have our guest today with us. He joins us for the second time. He was here, about a year ago, maybe? Three months ago?
We did two back-to-back, though, when I was here.
Back-to-back, that's right.
So really the third appearance.
The voice you're hearing out there, folks, is that none other than Walker, Texas Road Manager, our once great road manager from College Station, Texas, Blake Walker is here. How you doing, Walker?
Hey, man. Happy to be here, dude. It sure beats working.
Thrilled to be back here on the podcast.
I'm pumped, man. I've been looking forward to it. I've been trying to find lunches to cut out and get over here and talk shop. And
you've been listening. Now, when you first did the podcast, it was relatively new. We're just feeling our way along in the dark.
You know. I'd only heard I'd heard one maybe when I came. And then, man, since then, I've just been glued to it. It's been
glued
great.
To it. Every Love Wednesday it. When it posts, Walker is there. He always shoot me an email, a little feedback. Maybe a little correction, talking a little trash or something.
Yeah, I do talk a little trash.
Or sharpening a point. Man, Walker, of course, he always brings with him just a basket full of great stories, a lot of which I confess I forget.
Or won't admit.
Or won't admit to, or chosen to have leave my memory. There's so many times Blake's like, how can you not remember that? You don't remember walking out of that show? I'm like, what are we talking about? He just goes, you looked at me and you said, remember this, Walker, if you remember nothing I ever say. I'm just like, what? Anyway, it's always some outlandish statement, some quote, something said at 2 in the morning when I'm just kind of like on the way to the hotel.
True, though. It's always true.
But Walker, being a younger than us, a hardworking guy, a man with a mind like a steel trap, he's retained all this information. So in our second segment, we're going to get into one of the great stories during your tenure here, and that was when we had battery and alternator issues in the van. We had a couple of different shows in one day. 1100 Springs makes a cameo appearance in the story. Of course, Robert Earl Keen and Jack Ingram. Jason Boland was there. So we're going to take you through the alternator issue of 2005 or whenever that was. What year would that have been? Do you know? Something like that?
It would have to, it was probably 2004.
Okay,
that was right. my hardcore on the road big year was kind of 2004 and 2005, and then I went back to work for the slave for the rest of my life.
Back to serfdom for Walker. But man, in our first, the reason I kind of course I'm always trying to get Walker on the show. Hard to book you these days. Hard to book you out.
Got
there. Got a new baby. Your beautiful wife Megan out there. Yeah. Making a go of it, you know?
Yep.
The American dream.
Yeah.
You build a fence around your house. Didn't you build a back fence or something yourself?
Sort of, yeah. I attempted to.
What happened to it?
It's a lot harder than you think to pull. I demoed it. I just tore the thing down. I'm good at destroying things, not so much building things.
Building, you're a destroyer,
yeah,
not a builder.
I destroyed the old fence, had a new guy build a new one, so yeah.
Instead of a uniter, not a divider. You're a divider.
A divider.
A destroyer, not a builder. I'm glad you can admit that. Well, man, you sent me an opinion, a diatribe.
An HSO, if
an
you will.
An HSO.
A hot sports opinion.
Hot sports opinion on you two and their recent appearance on Saturday Night Live. Now, a favorite topic here, if you listen to me and Kurt South and stuff, and I don't know, I hope our viewers don't get bored with this, but I think there is so much to be learned, to be gleaned and discussed from current music. Because you have, man, the changing industry that everyone acknowledges, you know, downloading, no more albums, the death of the majors, and all that kind of stuff we're used to hearing us talk about a lot and everybody talk about. But over here on the other side, what gets brought up a lot, man, is bands like U2 and Springsteen and McCartney and the Stones, Mellencamp, the so-called dinosaur acts that are still able to tour. But there's a lot of lessons, man. It's just, right now you just have two worlds visible. You have the emerging online world and then this old world. And, I'm always a little bit like, gosh, didn't we discuss this last week? We're kind of covering the same ground, but different little things emerge, man, every week from some guy showing up on Letterman or something somebody says or some court deal or something that involves the dinosaur acts and how they're reacting to the new realities in the market. And how younger guys are dealing with it and the clashing of those two worlds. It's just a fundamental thing we always come around to on the podcast. So you two on Saturday Night Live. No? Where do you come down on that? Well, you're not much of a fan, though, are you?
See, here's my problem. And we had this discussion once in the van, and I know you were not happy about it.
I
was talking about how Bono dresses. Mm. And I've thought he's always dressed, you know, just weird and kind of the slicked hair back with the earrings and the gigantic sunglasses, and you've always said, "Hey man, that's rock and roll. Whatever he wears, he can pull off. He's a rock star." But see, yeah. I never saw it that way. I always thought that it passes because he's in a great huge band, but that he looks terrible and that what he puts on looks like something, you know, Miley Cyrus is wearing now. Yeah. And he was always dressing like just a goofball, and it's like, you know, I just never really loved U2, and I know people hate me for that. But when I was growing up, U2 was overplayed every single day on The Edge.
Yeah,
94.5 in Dallas was like the rock station, and so I grew up listening to that, and you just heard U2 constantly.
Yeah,
and so I didn't grow up and buy Joshua Tree and listen to it and buy the albums before that.
They were just you were just beaten over the head with them from the get-go.
I got them from early 90s and up. And so when I first heard Joshua Tree, man, I enjoyed it. I loved it. It was groundbreaking. There's some real good music there. And all the, you know, older guys had that CD, and I stole it from my brother and loved it.
Right.
But I felt like they kind of went way pop culture and like pop music. And, you know, the U2 that came in the late 90s, and then after that, it just seemed, you know, the Batman theme song and all that junk. I never liked any of that crap.
Yeah. So that was kind of like in your wheelhouse there.
Yeah, and that's all I knew of them. You know, and I knew they're a great live show, and they packed the crowds in, and blah, blah, blah. And so, but I never had a desire to go see him. And I listened to Bob Sturm, the Bad Radio on the Ticket. And he's like, "I don't go to shows. I go to U2 shows." He's like, I save up. I'll pay $400, $500. Don't care. When they come to town, I go. And so people like that have always said, you know, great live show and, you know, great hits. And for me, that, you know, I love Tom Petty. And when I went and saw him, we went together, me and Stolle, and we saw Petty. And dude, it was awesome.
So what happened on Saturday Night Live?
Sorry.
They did three songs, right?
They did three
now,
because they're U2.
I want to say this. I just rewind the tape a little bit. U2, of course, everybody knows U2, but I followed them growing up, 80s and all that. I was there in the wheelhouse. Man, lost track with them during the early 90s. Man, when they put out All You Can't Leave Behind in 2001, during 9/11 and all that record was out there. Man, that was a really, really good record. And they were, man, maybe never more relevant than right around that time. And they played Saturday Night Live, something they'd never done before. And it was a big deal. And so U2 comes on and plays Saturday Night Live. And I first of all was like, oh, this is silly. What are they going to do? And man, they start playing like Elevation or one of those songs off there. And had some good songs on the record. And they were just dressed kind of normal. I'm Bonham, I had a leather jacket on or something, but I mean, jeans and t-shirts kind of deal. Just rocking. And that whole tour was like that. And man, that was where he famously he went over, and I remember Val Kilmer was the host, and he was, of course, everyone was out there watching U2, and they were all over by the news anchor desk, and Bono, he jumps up on the fake news desk, and the cast is all around him, and like some of the girls were like crying and singing along.
Oh my!
You know, it was pretty cool. I mean, if you're a fan, you were just like, dude, you know, they didn't just play. They really destroyed, man. They did really, really good. But the thing happens, though, is then when the next album came out, they played Saturday Night Live again. Then they played it again. Then they played on Letterman for a week. And now here we are. What happened? Now they're playing three songs of Saturday Night Live. He's putting on a suit of lights or something. What happened? Walker.
I'm biased because I'm not a huge fan.
Right.
Okay, I recognize the greatness. But the first two songs they did were good. I think it was all new record. Yeah, all new stuff.
No Line on the Horizon.
But they were good songs. I mean, pretty good stuff. I'm not real big into them, but I mean, I recognize the greatness, like I said. But at the end, when they're about to roll the credits, and of course it's U2, so they give them three songs.
Yeah.
And it was so brutal.
But Bono, I Will Follow, man. It's aggressive. That's the oldest U2 song there is, almost.
Yeah,
I mean, it was off of Boy, you know, that was the first record. First song.
Great song. I could have done without Bono doing all his antics. He's hanging. He grabs a microphone. Mm-hmm. He's hanging from the microphone, twirling.
Yeah.
And like in my email, I just went off on him. It was like a bad off-Broadway Peter Pan show. I mean, he's like, he's hanging on this microphone. It's not a normal microphone. It's
hanging
like,
on? What do you mean hanging
he's
on?
He's holding it, like doing a pull-up, and it's hanging from the ceiling, and it's twirling him.
Oh.
And he's like spinning.
Oh.
And,
like
and
a Cirque du Soleil kind of deal.
Yes. And it's like the microphone is like a ring. With little bars going into the middle to the actual microphone. So he's holding onto the ring.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a jacket with reflectors going from like the neck along his shoulder all the way to like his sleeve. So like the reflectors, I guess they looked like mirrors.
Yeah, right.
And they're
kind
of going up the sleeve and up to the top of the jacket.
Right.
And the microphone shoots lasers out of it.
Yeah,
and
I see.
And the lasers reflect off his mirrors on his jacket, and he's spinning, and I wanted. It was awful. I was just like, "What is going on?"
Yeah,
he touches ground and lets go of the microphone, and they take the lasers off, but then he's standing up, spinning, like staring at the ceiling with his arms out, like you know, I'm God, you know, I'm rock God,
like Creed or
yeah.
something.
And it was so cheesy, and he walks out in front of the stage and starts spinning and dancing, and dude.
Yeah, it's like a circus act or something.
I don't buy into any of that. I'm not that guy. I just can't. I can't watch someone and respect him after that. I'm just like that's so cheesy to me.
It's just showy.
Yeah,
it's showy.
I can't.
Well,
here's the
interesting thing about all that, because like I said, there was a couple of good documentaries in 2000 where they came back with that All You Can't Leave Behind record. They recently done they did the Great Octung Baby, which I loved in 91 or something. Then they did Zooropa. Then they did Pop and did that world tour where they were in the Lemon and all that, which was a famous disaster because they sold out a bunch of stadiums and this Lemon deal, and they were in all these outrageous costumes, and it was just so big. And they were famously, I've seen a lot of documentaries on it, they really didn't make any money on that tour hardly. The record sold very poorly. Pop and the tour. They said, "Man, we'd been on tour for years, selling out stadiums. We didn't have any money when we came back. We didn't make money on this deal." So they just said, "Man, all the production, all that, really bit us in the ass." So that next record, All You Can't Leave Behind, was them stripped down in that whole deal, man. And that's a very focused album, very rootsy by U2 standards. And the tour was very, very simple. You can get the Live in Boston is great. I mean, they had the little catwalk around the crowd, but it was really pretty stripped down. They just had a couple screens up there with each of the guys. And man, they just made a statement, man. They were just doing acoustic sets out on the stage with simple lighting. And, you two just talked like, man, we learned a lot from that Pop tour. It was a fiasco. We tried to do too much, a bit off more than we can chew. We're coming back to our roots now with this deal. And man, what I find so astounding is what all I've read about this tour, and you're talking about the laser beams and the twirling, and is this 360 tour is like gigantic. I mean, it just makes the Lemon tour look like an opening act. But so I'm just like, what are they? they're shitting in their own nest here. I mean, I read an article just now, just said like, man, they're not even going to like break even till like a year from now when this tour keeps rolling because it costs so much money. And they're in the same situation they were with Pop. They got a record that no one's buying. It just went platinum. It's been out for months. It just went over a million sold. And they got this expensive tour and stuff everywhere. And it's just
If you're gonna put them in the category of one of the great dinosaurs that can sell anywhere out and writes great music, see that's where I draw the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would put Petty and the Stones and people like you said Springsteen and guys that write music that's deep, that's good, that have a good live show without the gimmicks.
Well, that's for the most part. That's the big difference there. The whether you like the music or not, it's subjective. Petty, Stone, Springsteen, not known for their staging at all. They got a big stage, they got some lights, but that's about it. Petty's not going to fly over you in a hang glider, And even the Stones, they have some bombastic, some elaborate sets and things. But really, man, you got Mick and Keith up there playing their guitars and stuff. There's not a whole lot of theatrics involved, staging and stuff. And you two, the whole Under Blood Red Sky, All You Can't Leave Behind tour. When it's stripped down and just four Irish rugby guys playing rock and roll, it works. But you're right. They go on these tangents, man, where they're dressing up in costumes and they got all these props and they got, touring with contraptions. And that always seems to be where they start to lose their way a little bit. And their audience is going, what is all this stuff?
That's why I can't put them in that category and call them. I mean, some of the stuff is genius and groundbreaking.
Sure.
Great,
right.
But to me, they're not considered one of the dinosaurs. Like, to me, I put Pearl Jam in their place.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl Jam has put out great records, great music consistently. Some people don't like some of the stuff they put out.
Limited staging, again, not a lot of gimmicks.
Eddie Vedder comes out and puts on an amazing live show with absolutely no gimmicks, no lights, no nothing.
Right.
He walks out there. The music speaks for itself. He doesn't play an instrument. He's by himself in front of the microphone. That also irgs me out about a lot of guys.
Toting a bottle of wine or something.
Sometimes.
Right. He's just kind of hanging out there. Right.
Vedder commands respects because he doesn't.
Neil Young's like that.
Yeah.
Those guys like that.
Yeah. Those guys I consider like early 90s bands and 80s bands that are worth the respect. I can't get there with you two. I respect some of the music, but because of all that crap they do and because of Bono's ridiculous dress and his ridiculous tours and all this stuff, I can't get back to where I just really respect them.
Yeah.
I saw him on Saturday Night Live. I fired off that email and I was like, look at this knucklehead. I was like, are you kidding me? It just destroys the song for me. It's like, are you an artist or are you an entertainer? And where's the fine line?
Right.
And to me, it's all about entertainment with them and their tours sponsored by BlackBerry and all this other crap. And it's like, give me a break just ease up on all that stuff. Make it about the music again.
Some of the stuff
they wrote, I mean, In the Name of Love, and so, those are amazing songs. I still remember the first time I ever heard it, I got goosebumps.
It was
amazing.
Sure.
But, nowadays, it's like, I don't feel that at all with you two. I'm not waiting on the next record. I'm waiting on the next scene that he does that's ridiculous for me to go, God, why is he still doing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does get a little embarrassing. I mean, I think of somebody like David Bowie is a guy who did have some good songs and stuff, but over the years went so over the top in the live theatrical Broadway show thing that it does get hard to get you just don't think about him when you think of the classic acts quite as much. I mean, of course, he's very classic. But maybe not right at the forefront of your brain where you're talking about some of the other guys. I mean, a lot of people love Bowie, but he was known for his antics maybe more than a lot of his albums.
Absolutely.
I mean, he has his great songs. He's got his greatest hits. But he made a lot of records and did a lot of touring, man. There was a lot of makeups and costumes and flying around and, stuff that you look back on is kind of silly. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with music.
And I would even give Bowie more respect in the fact that I believe he comes up with that stuff himself. I believe that Bowie...
Oh, but you think U2 is being used?
I think
U2
is a corporate whore.
Oh, come
I don't
on.
Think. I don't think.
Corporate? They're not sponsored. They never take a sponsorship money from anybody.
BlackBerry sponsors their new tour, the entire tour.
Is that right?
Absolutely. That's corporate sponsorship. I mean, I don't know if they've always done that. And like you said, probably not on other stuff.
Yeah, right.
But I don't think Bono sat in his house and decided he's going to have a microphone that shoots lasers. I think someone else put that thought in his head and said, man, this will be awesome. You're going to have this reflector jacket. We're going to do lasers out the microphone. This is the new thing. This is what you need to do. I think someone told him that, and he thought, that sounds great.
It does kind of. It does show when you are a little older. Now, if they were the Killers or something, like a young band, it'd be a cool new thing you've never seen anybody do. But with you two, yeah, it does sort of reek of desperation in some way. Do they not think we're going to show up just to hear them play their songs and sing?
Well, that's
the thing. They think they have to hang from the ceiling and fly around it's almost an insult to their fans because it's kind of like, we know y'all don't get it, so we're going to put all this extra. I don't think the audience appreciates that kind of spectacle or effort. You're kind of, it's distracting. It gets in the way.
If you appreciate that kind of stuff, then you're way into pop culture and all the crap that gets pumped out, and it's all about the show and what they're wearing. And that's not me. The music to me, you two can pick three amazing songs and do three songs on Saturday Night Live and blow you away.
Sure.
And they could be acoustic.
That's right. Oh, there's no doubt.
And that's what kills me is that they get out there and they want to keep up with the Joneses, and he wants to have the microphone with lasers and all that crap. And that's where I just give up. I just go, dude, I'm out. I don't want any part of it.
Well, man, I agree. I mean, they're great, but they're not going to get me to this tour, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
sure.
Well, they've already lived through their. This goes back again. Me and South and everybody always talking about those dinosaur acts as opposed to the new. It's difficult to see your favorite bands get older.
Yeah.
Petty's done it better than most. Dylan's old, but he doesn't play well anymore. He hardly sings and all that kind of thing. And you just get a point of diminishing returns with all of them. And Petty talks about really retiring. I doubt he ever will.
Yeah.
But he still kind of looks the same, sounds the same, plays the same. It's the show, And some of those bands like AC/DC or you were talking about, Springsteen, I mean, it's still a great live show, but it's really pretty simple. There's not a bunch of he doesn't get in a clear ball and roll out over the crowd.
No lasers, no somersaults.
He's just got his jeans on. He just goes out there and plays rock and roll. Well, that is some YouTube talk. It's yet more dinosaur talk, man. We're all discovering new music, new bands, all the fun stuff, making music ourselves. And all of a sudden, we're beaten over the head like with a bat by U2. And it's like, McCartney, instead of just coming out and playing our songs, we're going to put on a reflector suit and do somersaults. It's going to be Cirque du Soleil while we're singing Pride.
Red flag.
Pride in the Name of Love. You're just kind of like, what the heck, man?
Ugh.
Blake Walker bringing a hot opinion there.
HSOs.
Well, hey, this next segment here, we're going to go back into P2 history here. You go to a Pritchett show, you go, man, this is good stuff. Maybe you don't know all this behind-the-scenes stuff. How we got there. Some little things that happened that you would dare not ever talk about on a radio show or an interview or something. Of course, here on the podcast, we air out all these great old tales, old stories that only us know, but we're going to share it with all you fans out there, Romans and countrymen. The Van Alternator story, starring Robert Earl Keane, Jason Boland, and a couple of guys in Tyler who could have killed us when we come back. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your friend Phil Pritchett here on the one and only P2 podcast, where we discuss all things music, all things P2, the past, present, and future of music, country, rock and roll, call it whatever you'd like. My good friend and former road manager and always huge supporter and just a man who carries the flag for P2. And for so many other things. Blake Walker is here with us today at Trinidad. How you doing, Walker?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about U2, man. The dinosaur acts. Walker's out on U2.
Out.
All this laser stuff coming on. Oh, man. Well, I got to tell you, when I see the new U2 thing coming, I see the laser suit and all that, I don't think, yay, here we go again. I do say, oh boy, what are we doing? What are we doing?
But you're still going to buy the album. Don't kid yourself, Phil. You're going to have it.
I haven't. It's been out forever. I haven't even heard it. Hadn't even had any interest. Why is that? I got my vinyl over there, The Unforgettable Fire. Maybe we could do that in the vault. It's pretty good. Or we're going to do the Pritchett thing in the vault.
Whatever you
cool
want,
Cool and Unusual
brother.
Punishment. Coming up here in a little bit. Well, man, this was a numerous things happened. We discussed last time you were here about when the van got stolen.
Dark days.
With you during your tenure with the van.
Bad luck.
Bad luck. You were bad luck for us, Walker. Yeah. Bad luck for us out there. The only thing you did very, very well was sell Pritchett camouflaged hats in College Station.
I stole them all, man. They're gone. They
stole them all. They're gone. If you have one out there, take it off your head or take it out and just put it in a glass case. like so many autographed baseballs or something.
I sold you that cap.
Yeah, you did.
You're welcome if you have it.
Blake Walker has passed through his hands. Well, we get booked to play at the... what was that thing called out there? That amphitheater in East Texas?
The Robert Earl Keen Festival.
It was the Robert Earl Keen Texas Uprising.
Yes, Texas Uprising. Is the crater thing.
Yeah, it's a natural crater. It's creepy, I guess an asteroid struck it some way.
Wow.
Maybe it was the one that killed off the dinosaurs.
It probably was. That thing's huge.
That
huge.
Was the end of that. It's just this gigantic crater out there near Henderson.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Henderson, Texas.
Place to see a show.
There's a big stage there. I don't know much about this deal. I don't even know how we got on the bill, quite frankly. So, I mean, I don't even know Keen. I know nothing. I've met him a couple times. So we get on the bill early in the day. It's like 112 degrees.
Oof.
And so we're going to go play. Of course, we're early on the bill. So we're playing like 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in Henderson. Then we have to play that show and right as we're done and drive straight to Palestine, Texas to play for our good friends down there for the...
I don't know what show.
It was the Dogwood Trails in Palestine, Texas.
It was another festival.
It was us in 1100 Springs, and we were playing like in the evening there or something. But we had plenty of time. We're like, well, we'll knock out the Keen deal, get in the van, then we'll go hit this other. Very routine. A lot of times on weekends, you play a couple shows in the same day. No big deal there. So, well, what happens? We get out. I can't remember when we knew we were in trouble. We're driving from Dallas.
By the time we made it into Tyler, the little battery thing kept showing that it was dying. And
yeah,
the lights are fading.
The battery's fading. And finally, the whole van just shuts off, the old red van. And Walker's there, Stolly, and I'm pretty sure it was Lynch.
Yeah.
So we're in trouble. The van is dead, and we're in Tyler, which is about, I'm trying to remember, halfway to maybe to the gig, something like
that. Yeah, we're close at that point.
Now, anybody who knows anything about cars out there, which I do not, but I know more now than I used to. When your battery goes dead, you got one of two problems. You either got a bad battery, but more likely, you have an alternator problem. The alternator, of course, recharges the battery. Well, our battery goes dead. We don't even want to think about the alternator.
No, we hadn't even.
So we pull into Tyler. I came out on a loop somewhere. I'm like, man, we got to get a new battery.
And it was dead at that time.
Dead, not moving.
Yep.
So I came out, and it's like a Sunday, isn't it? Oh, it's 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, 4th of July weekend.
Remember?
Yes.
We thought so everything's closed.
Yep.
O'Reilly's Auto Parts. And so me and Lynch, or me and you, we roll the van into the parking lot. We just get out on foot, start walking down the... I mean, we got to go find an auto parts store or something. So we're walking.
We found a shady dude in Tyler.
Well, we get to an abandoned, like, convenience store.
Old gas station.
But there's all these abandoned. There's all these dudes just sitting out in front of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're panhandling or not, but they got a lot of parts from cars, a couple old cars and stuff.
I think they might have been working on a car and playing.
I don't know. Yeah, but they were just squatting there. Right? Yeah. In front, they wasn't their shop.
It was shady.
So we had to walk by them, so I was just kind of moving. The guy was like, hey, what's going on? And we look at him, he's got some car stuff. I was like, man, yeah, you guys got a battery? And they're like, oh, yeah, man, we got a battery. And they show me this car battery. It looks kind of used. It goes used, but it's all right, you know. I'm just thinking, geez, you know, what can we do? And it's really, really hot. So then, man, we get the guys like, we'll get in my car, we'll drive to your car to put the battery in.
Yep.
Sketchy. I just feel bad going, no, and walking while this guy's driving.
So I don't want the guy to feel self-conscious. But this dude is kind of rough, man. I don't want to get in the...
Oh, he's beyond rough. I mean, he was...
Beyond rough, man. So anyway, he's rough, against my better judgment, I get in this guy's car.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy is driving me around Tyler, Texas with a battery. And I'm just like, dude, if he turns around and shoots me or something, this is going to look so bad. People are going to go, man, he was supposed to be playing some gig. Phil, he was just in some crack dealer's car. And Tyler, just, you know, some deal gone wrong. I'm just like, if something bad happens, this is gonna look bad.
Oh, it could have easily gone dead
the other way.
Dead in a dumpster behind O'Reilly Auto Parts in Tyler. Bill Pritchard would be the end of it. Today. Yeah,
they would just a sordid end to my career right there.
Stolen some pocket lint and guitar picks.
That's
out of
right.
Your pocket.
Yeah, that guy would have got. He would have been very disappointed when he had tried to go and run my credit card at the gas pump. Oh man, so he. But sure enough, to this guy's credit, he pulls right up to the van. He gets out. And he ratchets that old battery in there, starts right up. Yeah! So we're just excited as hell. We jump back in the car. We haul ass. Now we're pressed for time, obviously. And man, sure enough, this battery starts. Now, did we make it? We made it there, though.
Yeah. If you got a bad alternator, the next battery you put in is going to run.
It's just going to drain.
It's going to run until it's dead.
It's just like run until it's dead.
And that's when we figured it out.
We figured it out then. I go, man, well, if it's the alternator, we'll know real quick.
We limped into that.
Limped into this festival. So Ingram's there and Boland and all these guys. So we go up to Ingram's bus.
Oh.
And I go, man, we're going to have to charge the battery. He's almost dead now.
Yep.
So while I'm on stage, we hook up. We got a jack. Go, hey, man, we get a jump off your deal. So during our set, we'll just be charging the battery.
It was awesome.
So we had the bus all opened up, and it's 112.
We limped in, and our van, poor thing, dies right behind the VIP catering. So everybody's out there eating and drinking beer, and they got their buses lined up with AC
still
going.
There's Phil's van that doesn't even work.
And we just pull in, and it dies, and they all kind of look at us like, what's going on? We pile out. Like,
well, fortunately for us, our old road manager, Jordan Powell, was working for Jack. He'd left me for the Jack gig. And, of course, we're all still good friends. And so Powell's very instrumental. He's hooking up the car. Dude. And yeah, so it's just this scene. Like, whose van is that? I got the hood up. It's just a disaster. So we finally make it out on the stage in the heat. I mean, there's a couple bands playing before us that it was very quiet. Some band was playing, but there's a lot of people starting to gather out there. And so we get ready to do our deal and went out there. And, of course, back when Powell was our road manager, you old fans out there will remember Jordan Powell dressing up as Tom Petty and coming out on the stage. That was a big highlight.
Oh, yeah.
Powell would put on the big stovepipe hat that we carried around, sunglasses, the vest.
The vest.
Put the cigarette in his mouth and come out during. We'd do a Petty song, and then he would sort of just emerge on the stage, and I wouldn't introduce him as Tom Petty. I wouldn't say, hey. I would just point, like, hey, look who's here, and, you know, and he would just start rocking.
He looked the part.
He looked the part. He had the long blonde hair. So we did it as a gag. One thing we did it as a gag one night, and all of a sudden now we just do it. All the time.
I still have people that come up to me and go, dude, man, does Pritchard still know Petty?
Is it Petty?
I'm like, he does. Oh, yeah. They're real close. They hang out a lot.
So just building the legend there, building the myth. So Pal, after we get the van all charged up, I want to make a show. So I get Pal, I go, hey, man, you know, we get up there, we're going to rip into American Girl or something. I go, man, grab the old hat and come on out. He's like, I got it, man. I got it. We hadn't seen him in a while. So that's what we did. So we get the crowd, we get things kind of going. I mean, it's.
Oh yeah.
I remember it was so hot. I was wearing black boots. My feet were just on fire. The sun. It was so hot.
East Texas heat.
And it was like burning my foot inside my boot. There was like a black stage and no overhead cover.
It's the price you pay for rock and
roll, man.
It
was just. It was unreal. So then all of a sudden, sure enough, man, we get the crowd going. We throw this song out, that song out. Then here comes up Petty. And dude, the crowd just the dudes way back on the rim of the crater just come to their feet, you know. And so we're out on the front of the stage just doing, you know, Mary Jane's Last Dance probably, and it's great. And so during this whole Petty deal, I look over the side of the stage and there's Boland and Ingram and his band, and they're all laughing. They haven't seen this deal.
Yeah, they loved it.
Of course, Powell went around telling everybody it was going down. So there's this big gag. It's just a big old fun fest. And then I look to the other side of the stage, to the other wing, and who's standing there but Robert Earl Keane.
Loving it.
Well, sunglasses, arms crossed, just frowning. Not moving.
Maybe not loving it.
And I just go, shit, there's Keane over there. Man, he looks pissed. So I immediately kind of, I kind of quit hamming it up a bit. I finished the song and we play. And Keen, no one was around Keen. He was just standing there by himself. So we get off stage and towel off and get our van going. And I feel like I ought to thank Keen. It's his festival. I don't know Keen very well. I'm a huge fan of his, you know. So he's up there eating some barbecue by himself. I go, man, I'm getting ready to drive off. I go, man, I need to say something to Robert. So I go over there and I go, Robert, I'm Phil Pritchard. I just played your festival out here. And he kind of looks up, sticks out his hand, I shake his hand, he doesn't say anything. And I kind of go, hey, man, I hope we didn't bring the whole integrity level of the event down by rolling a fake Tom Petty out there. Sorry. And he looks up, just like chewing on a rib, and he goes, are you kidding, man? Someone backstage started yelling, hey, Tom Petty's on stage. I went running up there. I thought it was great. I go, well, it's kind of a cheap gag. He just smiled. He goes, I love a cheap gag, man. I was like, well, cool, man. So Keen, he was really cool about it. It was good to see. So that really made me feel great. And we jump in the van. So we're hightailing it to Palestine, Texas. Budweiser festival there in Palestine. What happens, Walker?
Things start going south again.
So it's the alternator. We know it's the alternator now.
Yeah.
We don't know how much life we got left.
We had to.
Actually, that battery, it's like a gas gauge. It just goes down.
Yep.
Doesn't it?
And happens. We had to call the two guys that we knew, I guess, who worked for Budweiser putting the gig on.
Yeah. We died right there by the
railroad tracks. We died and we got out and we're like standing right by the railroad tracks.
Was Troy Johnson there?
I don't think so.
No. So
we're all just sitting there.
These disasters. Yeah, we start by the railroad track.
We call those guys.
We call ahead to Palestine and say, we need a battery.
Yeah, they get a couple batteries because they know it may not make it on just one. Yeah. We're probably halfway there. So they come
those
out.
Those dudes were golden, though.
Yeah, big fans. They
roll up,
help.
They just hop out of the van, hit the guy, the socket wrench, throws that battery in there, and go, let's go. So they follow us into Palestine. We play the gig. I make an announcement on the stage. Now, tomorrow's Sunday. It was a Saturday. Tomorrow's Sunday and 4th of July weekend. I go, dude, we're not going to be able to get an alternator put in the freaking van. We're going to be stuck here on Sunday or Monday, which was a disaster. So on stage, there's a pretty good crowd there. It's a local crowd, you know. And I'm like, man, we're in Palestine, Texas, man, the heart of Texas. Just at a Budweiser festival. If we can't find somebody in the crowd who can fix our van, then by God, I've lost all faith.
Yeah,
you know?
This ain't America.
This ain't America. So on the mic, I say, thanks a lot, folks, for coming out. If any of y'all can put an alternator in the van, we'll make it worth your while. See me after the show. So we get off stage. Sure enough, man, here's a couple dudes just in their camo with their tall boy buds. So what you got wrong, man, little alternator? I'm like, well, you know, we can't get the Pep Boys or O'Reilly. The one of the guy offered like it was at his house or something.
Oh yeah, he said he could change it. And he's like, y'all show up the next morning
at his house.
And we ended up dropping the van off at his house.
Yeah. And so what happened was, the guy just goes, man, bring it to my house. I'll just do it in my garage if you need an alternator, which was awesome. So we go to the hotel
for you guys.
This was a great rock star moment for me. I've had a long day, dude. I've played two performances in like 110 degree heat. I've had the stress of driving with that, you know, that battery. I was tense. So after the show, get to the hotel, I take a cold shower. And Walker, to his, maybe his greatest moment.
A boy to a man.
Yeah, from boy to a man. He comes and he just says, and I'm like, man, we got to get to this guy's house. We got to get the alternator changed. We got to get this and this. And me, Phil, the guy who handles everything. He does everything. Walker just says, dude, look, it's been a long day. I'm the road manager. Just give me the keys of the van. And by God, I'm gonna handle it.
Took the bull.
I'm like, but where's the guy? Are you meeting the guy? Walker's like, just look, I got his number. It's done. So man, I just exhale. I just throw you the keys at about midnight, and I just crawl into my nice cold boot. I put the AC on about 52, curl up in my bed, and I just go to sleep. And I wake up the next morning. I'm gonna give my perspective, then I want to hear yours. I wake up. There's just the keys like under the door. I just pick up the keys. I go out to the van. You had a separate ride was there or something.
They came and got me the next morning.
Oh, God. Was this also when I was getting back to play for the Texas OU game? No, this is July, so it wouldn't have been that.
No.
That was another time. Anyway, so I'm so confused. I can't believe how many gigs I played down there. So I wake up and just the keys. Yeah. just start the van. There's just a little note in there. It just starts up. Say, hey, you're all ready to go. This is like 8 in the morning or 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
So what my question was, how did this happen? What happened?
What happened was you have three musicians who know nothing about cars and don't want to learn. Or
one road manager.
Or we're smart enough to know to not say a word and let the road manager handle it, which, you know,
that's right.
From
that's,
a boy to a
that's
man.
That's what we did.
I didn't really know much. I was pretty green, but I earned my keep that weekend for sure.
You did. So did you drive over to the dude's house in the car? Or did he come tow it?
They after the gig, you guys got a ride to the hotel, or we all got a ride to the hotel. They took the car. They tugged the van with a rope and a chain or whatever. They got the van back to their house, and they said, we'll call you in the morning. And I was hoping maybe they'll change it tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
They called my cell phone at about 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And so I got up and
they come pick you up?
They came pick me up.
Yeah.
And, of course, we hung out
good
all night
guys.
Talking. Kind, yeah.
You know, I mean.
So we're all tired. But, no, I got up by myself, went out there, and this was another moment of I could end up dead in the woods.
Gutted
Tyler,
like a deer.
Yeah, just some creepy ritual just on CSI the next day, and I'm just in the woods.
Being in a band, when you're out traveling around, you just get in those situations where
you're helpless.
If you don't put your life in some other person's hands, you're not going to make it. Like, man, we either get on this plane or get in the car with this dude, or we're not going to make the show. And you're like, man, under any circumstance, I would never get in the car with that guy. Or so you just go... It's right. A shame, but that you do get in those situations often.
You got to trust your fans.
Oh, yeah.
And those two fans, man, it was so weird. They picked me up like 7 a.m. I literally, the first time I ever met them was the day before for 20 minutes. And, you know, we drive. They're like neighbors. They hung out for like 40 years and lived in this little bitty town.
Big hunters, big deer hunters. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I go in their house and, you know, everyone's asleep and it's all awkward. I don't know anyone. I'm sitting in the den.
And he's out in the garage fixing the car?
And he's getting his tools together and making coffee, you know. And so we're trying to make small talk. And once again, I'm a paranoid guy anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You can ask anyone who knows me pretty well. So I'm already thinking like...
You're kind of fingering that pocket knife on the keychain just in case you got to pull a blade on the guy.
I remember seeing as I walked in, he had a huge freezer in the garage, you know, the big low one.
That, yeah.
You know, he said it just to keep his deer meat. But I was just like, I could picture myself severed sitting in that freezer. As Phil and the guys, you know, find someone to pick him up.
To be discovered.
Yeah. So.
Oh, gosh.
I sat in his den, and the other guy showed up, and they're talking
some
inside
Walker
jokes.
Walker sausage in there.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So we sit there for a minute, and then he's like, all right, you know, and I'm, you know, I'd never changed an alternator at that point. I learned real quick. But he, you know, was like my dad. He's like, okay, now you do this. You know, he'd show me and then have me actually do stuff.
Oh, so you sort of did it with him.
Yeah. So we take the thing apart. And the rest of the time I sat around watching after that, but he got it in and in like record redneck speed. I mean, just like closed his eyes and it was done. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
just teach those guys at birth how to gut deer and change alternators.
It's so valuable, man. I wish I knew more about it.
So they changed it out and they talked and hung out. They were good friends. So there were a lot of inside jokes and me standing there all awkward, hoping nobody stabs me and just hoping the alternator gets put in right. And then they switched it out and, you know, we talk about, you know, Phil shows and stuff. They were big fans.
Yeah.
And then switch it out, and then I drive the van back to the hotel, that was it, man. They just said, hey, tell Phil thanks, and put a note on it, and then I went back upstairs, took a nap, woke up, and then, you know, it didn't miss a beat. Lynch and Stoller were like, all right, let's go, you know.
Is that when we put out the fire on the way home?
Yes.
Was that
yes.
the same trip?
That is the same trip.
Now, that was just you, me, and Stoller.
Because
I'm trying to think.
Because Lynch might have gone home on a plane or something.
I want to say maybe Shane came from Houston and met us.
That's possible. There's a lot of
maybe that's there's a lot of when Shane was playing. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, we're driving back down whatever that road is, goes through Athens.
Yep.
At 287, I think.
When you're going up towards Terrell, when you go through
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we look over, and there's a burgeoning grass fire, just like in the median or on the side.
It's all quiet.
There was no one on the road. It was on the other side of the highway, but it was starting to get out of. It was looking like obviously just cigarette butt or something. We dropped the smoke and we're just driving. I kind of look up in the rearview mirror and I see Stolly kind of looking at Walker and I'm just like, man, should we turn around, put that fire out? Just let's do it, man. Let's just roll through there.
Yeah.
Oh, performing our civic duty.
Yeah.
And man, so we jump out. And we start stomping the fire out.
Yeah.
You know? just dancing like a...
Saved East Texas.
Saved East Texas that day. I remember, dude, I started getting so tired, and the flames were growing.
Well, it was hard to stomp it out,
We were, like, laughing at first, like, how you doing? And then we looked up, man, and we were all winded. And we still had some, like, a cooler in the car with some water. We're like, I'll throw this on there. We did that, and that just kind of went, psst. That didn't do anything. It just, the flames were just, I'm just like, oh, man. And so I start worrying that my jeans are going to, like, get, my clothes are going to get caught on fire. I started my boots. They're kind of like melting. The heels of my boots after that were kind of melted, you know, a little bit.
It was dangerous.
It was pretty intense. I mean, we did put the whole thing out.
Yeah.
It took a lot longer than I thought it was going to. I mean, it took about 15 minutes.
We're using dirty shirts and all kinds of stuff. Stomping it out. Yeah.
It was early in the morning. It was real dry. And in July, you know, it could have been bad, you know. So we saved East Texas, man.
We did.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't remember
and
that.
And then we get back in the car and nobody says a word. We just kind of keep going.
Yeah, just keep on going.
This is no big deal.
Well, that is the alternator story. Thank you to Robert Earl Keen, Jack, and Powell, and Bolin for making cameos in our true life story there. And for Tom Petty.
You know what? I got to share one more thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was the same trip when me, you, and Stolly are in the van. And Stolly's doing like Sudoku or something. Mm-hmm. He's like doing a crossword puzzle. It's real quiet. And a truck pulls up next to us.
Uh-oh.
And there's a donkey in the back of the pickup truck in like a makeshift cage. And it's real quiet. And everyone was you could see the wheels turning. Everyone's trying to come up with a one-liner. And Stolly just turns and goes, hey, that guy's hauling ass. We laughed for like an hour straight.
I think what happened first, though, I hit Stolly and I go, nice ass. And there was a ripple of laughter. Then Stolly just shook his head no and goes, no, that guy's hauling ass. He just one-upped me.
Oh, it's classic.
It was always a big matching of wits with Jason Stolly.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You guys had the same sense of humor, man. It's y'all are two peas in a pod.
We would do those pun games where we'd just go back and forth for hours. You know, the body parts and, you know, you just go back and forth with puns. And then when you can't come up with one, you're done.
He loved Stolly loves the store or the place that has the pun in the name, you know? He'd always drive by and go, you know, and just call out some, you know. He loved that.
So witty. Yeah. So witty, Jason Stolly. Well, all right, man. That is some alternator, some Pritchett disaster road story talk. Oh, there's so many. We could have Walker in here every day and just do another one.
It's good times.
Well, coming up here in the vault. Man, we haven't done a Pritchett album since Suburban Legends. Maybe the last time you were here.
Love that record. Good times.
Long time. So we want to get to some of our albums as well. We're going to look at, we're going to skip ahead in the catalog a little bit to Cool and Unusual Punishment Live. Boy, a lot of stuff surrounding the making of this album. Kind of funny stuff. But we're going to take a listen to that live record when we get back.
This is College Station, right? I was just checking. Colorado must take the stand. Colorado, you made me love you, so I'm putting you on trial for turning me against my own state, to whom I've been so faithful and loved exclusively for a while. Like any affair of this kind, it began so innocently. You seduced me with your beauty, but I, a sucker for sensation, I found no resistance in me. I found no strength to defer. Colorado must take the step. She has made an adulterer of a happily married man.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Joining me is our old road manager, Walker, Texas road manager. Blake Walker is here.
What's up?
Ta-da! Recounting stories of havoc on
the road.
It'd be so boring if we just sat here and talked about how awesome we were and how smooth every gig went. And let's face it. Thank God. I'm really grateful that so many of them do. But sadly, those are the ones you don't remember as much. You have a long string of shows in College Station or Corpus that, hey, man, there's a lot of people there. We played. It was awesome. Stolly came out and did the thing on the front of the drum, and Phil played with the drumstick, and we did Port Aransas as the encore, and everyone just thought it was great. It was 2.5 hours. But all those run together. The ones that stand out are the incidences where you fear you think you're gonna you're gonna wind up in some guy in East Texas's meat freezer. You know, those are the ones you remember the best.
Yeah.
Well, man, after I got back from Nashville, I had made Phil World and Phil Comes Alive, Suburban Legends, which I made in Nashville, but I didn't live up there. And then we made Heritage Way. And so when I come back from Nashville, I start playing a lot again and got hooked up with Stalling Lynch, Troy Johnson, who was managing me, booking all the shows and stuff. He knew Lynch was looking for a gig, and he knew Stolly. Stolly moved up to Dallas from Austin, so he made the Tougher Than the Rest album. And then that kind of got us rolling again, and so we think, man, let's do a live record. Because, man, Phil Comes Alive had been my best-selling album. The live albums always sell the best, man. I mean, dude, the Cool and Unusual Punishment, by far the best-selling Pritchett album.
Really?
Oh, no, not even close.
Wow.
Phil Comes Alive behind it. But the live albums, man, people just, it's more of it's a show, it's a memorable thing. Any live album is going to usually be kind of a greatest hits kind of thing. You're playing your most popular songs. It's tougher to get people to buy the, 10 songs they don't know. I guess that's the lesson there. So we decide that we are going to record one night at Poor David's Pub, the old Poor David's on Greenville, where we did well, and one night at the Tap in College Station, which we had to convince to let us play there because they don't really have bands a lot anymore and all that. But it was a perfect size room. It was intimate but big enough to hold a big crowd.
Oh, yeah.
So Walker's on board for that. You can see the Tap, I think it's the Tap Show,
yeah,
on YouTube, all the live.
A friend of mine, Jesse Hill, who's went to the University of Texas.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was a film student thing.
He does like all kinds of film stuff now, music videos and advertising and whatnot. But I got with him and said, dude, we got to film Phil. He's doing a live show.
And he had like some for his class. Like he had to do some kind of documentary or something.
He did it as a project for his class at TU. But yeah. He came up. We filmed that sucker. It was fun, man.
It was. And he just had some simple cameras. I didn't think a whole lot of it, but... he used them pretty well. I mean, there's some funny little effects on a couple of them, but it came out good. You get a good sense of the show.
We made a little DVD.
We had like five DVD. Of them made. We made five DVDs. And for your benefit, there are a lot of it's on YouTube.
Yeah, you can see a lot of it on YouTube. It's named by song.
Yeah, there's Tougher Than the Rest is on there. What were some of the other songs that made it?
He put like Southern Accents, a Tom Petty cover.
Bruising Sheetrock's on there.
Bruising Sheetrock's on there.
Tougher's on there.
Maria's on there. Maria.
Yeah, stuff like that. But that was the Tap Show. We did the Tap Show, then we also did the Dallas Show. And to help sort of fund the deal, Jordan Powell, road manager, has the great idea to, he goes, hey, man, we'll sell packages on the website. Whereas for $100, you get a copy of the album and a T-shirt and tickets to the show, something like that. And then for $250, you get, I can't remember what it was, but it's a little more,
to
hang out with us. Then for the granddaddy was $500. You get all the other stuff, and you get to ride on the bus with the band. Now, we were renting a bus occasionally here and there. That was how that was going down. Well, hold on one second.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So we had the packages. We had the packages to help fund the album. We figured, hey, man, if one or two guys wants to ride on the bus, we'll sell. Which is great, because that's how I got to meet Kevin Haggard. He just buys the all-in package. And rides the bus. So it came out pretty good. We, played the show. We had we had our set just going really well here in this little... It's a good little snapshot, I think, of where the band was back then. You were around a lot then.
And that was my heyday. I mean, I first got into your stuff, and you moved to Nashville, and I was like, dang it. And then came back, Stolly and Lynch, and then I watched so many... of the live shows with Tougher Than the Rest. And everyone wanted, just you couldn't pump out new music fast enough. Everyone wanted you to do something else. And but at that point, the live show in College Station was an unbelievable event.
Yeah, we did. We had a big crowd, and it was we did really well in that place.
We always looked forward to those shows. There'd be, you know, 200, 300 of us. Everyone knew. I mean, the front pit with what's the guy with the big black hair that was always at the show?
Oh, Rudy.
Rudy, yeah.
He still comes to, like, the firehouse, man.
It was like Rudy's clique of guys, my clique of guys, Will Haley and Caleb Rozier's clique of guys.
And no,
like,
girls.
And no chicks. Reed Fairchild and his buddies.
Meanwhile, down the road, Honey Brown sold 3,000 tickets to women. While Phil was playing for 200 men at the tap.
But, dude, it was the perfect storm in College Station. There was like 7 or 8 of us, all just huge fans, big cliques of guys that would get together, pre-party, go to the show, and it was just this massive group of guys that we all just knew each other by seeing each other at Phil's shows. And so when you'd come, dude, we knew every word. We're all in the middle just going crazy, get there 2 hours early and drink specials. And so any College Station show in like 02, 03, 04 was just wheels off. I mean, it was packed no matter where you played College Station. And we were all just rowdy. Knew all the words.
Yeah.
Just got there early and packed the place. We loved it.
You know, these day and age, Stu sings an Elton John song sometimes.
Love that.
We talk about the bands, beards, etc. We got the white shirts, the black shirts. We have a show around the current band. Things develop, things work. But, man, this was kind of at a peak to where, man, we had a real show and a lot of fun little shtick things.
Oh,
we
yeah.
did. It, of course, you have Ryan Lynch's birthday.
Every show.
Every show is Ryan's birthday. Stolly came out on Skywalker and did the thing on the drums, which was cool.
The Port Aransas, you guys all three.
Port Aransas, we all came
in
front of the stage and sang. So we really had to, and all those things had developed, you know, like just one night we did it and we're like, hey, that's cool. We'll start doing that. And then people start looking forward to it and it's something fun. So we had, and Lynch sang What I Got, sang the song, which, was a crowd favorite that made it on there.
Yeah.
And I'm always proud of Suicide Blues, the Ragweed song
Ragweed
we did.
Ragweed tune, yeah.
That was a little more of an obscure Ragweed song. They weren't nearly as big.
No.
Cody had, on the album before this, of course, he came and sang Willin' with me on Tougher Than the Rest. So we were kind of running with Ragweed a lot in those days, playing a lot of shows. So we did that Suicide Blues song kind of for fun. It's a little corny. People look back, oh, they covered a Ragweed song. That's what everybody does. I was like, man, you know.
Not
really,
back then.
Nobody really did it back then. But
yeah,
anyway.
Y'all's cover of it was, you actually changed it up a little.
This was 2003. God, man, that was a long time ago. I always feel like this is a new album.
It's the first album I ever got any love on. It thanks me so much.
Oh, does it thank you, profusely?
I framed it.
Yeah. It was fun. I think it captures the band very well.
That snapshot was like, when I think of the band, it is this album, this night, all the gimmicks.
It's definitely one where even today when someone comes and sees a show and says, oh, I don't have any of it, where should I start, what should I get? It's hard to throw them High Tide in the Heartland or something where maybe there's just one or two songs that we do routinely. This is a guy, this is kind of the live show, you know.
That was, you know, four or five years in the making, dude. That thing was a compilation of some great nights that kind of poured out this set list.
It was, man. Adam Oder, our good friend at Cedar Creek, he came and recorded both nights, rolled his rig into Poor David's, and it was about 50-50, and I couldn't tell you now which songs were from Poor David's and which ones were from the Tap. They sounded remarkably similar. I was It was unbelievable. I go, man, one of them's going to sound like really good, one of them's going to sound bad, or, man, those Poor David's.
I thought it would be that way,
Poor David's ones, man, the drums are just thin or something. But, man, they both sounded like us playing and just had a good, they sounded like us, you know, both shows. And both, neither room was a real problem or anything like that. And pretty interesting. It's funny, Maria is 10 minutes and 47 seconds. On here,
a few guitar
and
solos.
And I think it's even short. I think it's even shorter. I think it was really like 13 or 14 minutes, but there were some issues in some of the middle part or something. There was some editing. If memory serves me right, it was even longer than that. the actual version of it.
Dude, that show in College Station was really long. I remember we ran out of film.
Yeah, yeah.
We bought all this extra. Jesse and I had all these cameras, and we bought these extra tapes. And dude, it was almost a 3-hour show.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
Dude, we were rolling on everything. Like, if you look at those YouTube videos, you can see either one of us on the other side filming from another angle.
Right.
Just going around filming the whole thing, and it's like, dude, the show was so long.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, we ran out of film at the end, but
we had a lot of albums by that time. I mean, we had this record here's 14 songs. We probably played 26 that night. Or so. So, very long rocking. Well, man, if you happen to be tuning into the podcast for the first time and wondering what it's all about, who this Phil Pritchett guy is, etc., man, start with Cool and Unusual Punishment Live. If it's not your deal, then go back to wherever you came from. It's not for you. But if you're gonna dig P2FB, man, Cool and Unusual Punishment, man, you're like, all right, cool, I want to dig deeper, then that's great. It's a good starting point. Well, my guest has been Blake Walker. Walker, Texas Road Manager, has been here with us. Thanks for coming in, sir.
Thank you.
For sharing your reminiscence, your thoughts on the alternator, the van, the making of Cool and Unusual, Punishment in the Vault, etc. And also for your HSO on U2. Maybe they ought to just hang it up, according to Walker. I don't know.
Sorry.
They need to just make that acoustic record. You're right. Strip it all back down, get back to the basics, and people
will
dig it.
There we go.
Something like that. Well, you can get all your Phil Pritchett music at philpritchett.com. Order the drop card for $20. I will send you a drop card in the mail. That will give you access to our website where you can download 11 albums from me and the full band for just $20. Also, we got some new shirts in, new sizes and all that. The old gray tee, man, reordered it for all you folks out there. So check that out. You can get all of our stuff on iTunes. And look for the new Phil Pritchett, the full band album coming out here probably early November, man. I start getting out there a lot. That's almost finished up. We're going to have a couple shows dedicated to that here in the future, in the very near future. And thanks for listening, folks. Be good to each other out there, and we'll see you all next time.
Tougher than the rest. 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 She's got a face that knows no concept of fear. Even criminals that never do wills vanish each time that she appears. She's got a reputation as somebody who knows how to get things done. She's got a habit of picking up red hot pots and pans with her bare hands just for fun. She doesn't care about all of the everyday stresses. She's a bag of nails beneath her colorful dresses. She's tougher than the rest. Tougher than the rest. A little hardship brings out her best style. Shakes and the pain in my neck, back and then my knees. And any diagnosis will show that psychosis is the cause of my grief. But she's the one who fills me up with all of the strength, hope, and belief. Now she doesn't care about the things that make us worry. She can run around at speeds and never hurry. She's tougher than the rat. Tougher than the rat. A little hardship brings out her best, her best, her best. All right! We'll be right back.
drinks her beer slowly. She lights the candles in her room with the strike of a match. The band helps me sing. My guitar helps me play. Keep the bass low down and stay on the hi-hats. For God's sake, shit, tougher than the red, much tougher. Tougher than the red, much tougher. Tougher than the red.